Good afternoon. Welcome to Division 1 of the Court of Appeals. We have one case scheduled on the 130 docket, Pham versus State Farm. Are the attorneys present on that case?
Yes, Your Honor.
And you should have been provided with a handout of our procedures.
We were.
Yes, all right. If anyone in the courtroom has a cell phone or pager, please make sure it's turned off so it doesn't interrupt us during oral argument, and you may begin.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'd like to reserve 5 minutes, if I may.
All right.
My name is William Muir. My bar number is 018-093. It's an honor and privilege to be here today. First, the court dismissed this action based on statute of limitations, which at 1380-107.51b, it provides that if we brought an action against the at-fault driver in a timely fashion, then we would have the uninsured motorist claim shall be timely if such action is commenced or such arbitration is demanded within 2 years after the insured received payment of the judgment on the underlying bodily injury claim. The appellants in this case did not receive payment or judgment, rather, on the underlying bodily injury claim until we received the judgment of the liability claim against Hartford on April 4, 2006.
Mr. Muir, let me back you up just a minute, if I might. In your briefs, if I recall correctly, you also argued subsection A of the statute of limitations statute, and that subsection applies to uninsured motorists rather than underinsured motorists. So is it your contention that that subsection also applies?
It's our contention that applies to what, Your Honor.
How can that apply if Mr. Guerra had some insurance?
It's our position that he was uninsured with respect to the Hartford policy. The Hartford policy provided no coverage. We have to look at this as if there's two policies, the liability policy issued by Allstate, the other liability policy issued by Hartford. And with respect to the Hartford policy, he was uninsured. And on page 13 of our brief, I think we addressed some of that. An action or arbitration of an uninsured motorist insurance shall be commenced or demanded by arbitration within 3 years after the cause of action accrues. It's our position that the cause of action in this case accrued not until the Hartford decision was rendered, because this court in the Pham decision stated that there are no UIM benefits until the claim against Hartford is fully resolved. And it goes on to say, however, if we brought an action against the at-fault driver, then this action shall be timely if brought within 2 years after the insured knows that the tortfeasor is not covered by any applicable insurance. Any applicable insurance requires us to look at both policies, the Allstate policy and the Hartford policy. And we didn't know that he was not covered by the Hartford policy until the Honorable Walker Miller rendered that decision on April 4, 2006. So that's why this section applies. He was uninsured with respect to the Hartford policy.
But it says with respect to any insurance?
It says within 2 years after the insured knows that the tortfeasor is not covered by
any,
which includes the Hartford liability coverage.
But it says insurance. Any. It doesn't say any particular. It says any.
It says any applicable insurance.
Right.
And so our view of that is you look at any insurance, and we got two policies. We have the liability policy with Allstate and Hartford. And if you look at the State Farm policy, which interprets the statute, State Farm's insurance policy says that there are no UIM benefits until you reach a settlement or obtain a judgment with respect to all policies of liability. And that's stated clearly in the State Farm auto policy. And so even the State Farm auto insurance policy says if you have more than one liability policy, You must look at both, and we're not going to have, there are no UAM benefits until you're done with both of those policies, until you get full resolution from both policies. Because as this Court of Appeals stated in its fan decision, if we recovered against Hartford, State Farm would have no obligation to pay any UIM benefits. And so this action could not have accrued until we concluded that case. And furthermore, and perhaps most importantly, there was a stay order that we stipulated to and the trial court entered that stayed all UIM proceedings pending the outcome of that Hartford decision.
Well, you had two cases, a 96 case and a 98 case. And those were dismissed for failure to prosecute. Is that correct?
Correct. One was dismissed without prejudice. That's where the UIM claims were. And that
and
was dismissed.
Which one was that?
Pardon me?
Which one?
That was 765.
Okay.
765 was dismissed without prejudice.
And that was timely filed.
That was
under
timely filed.
Statute of limitations.
Correct. And 9130, 98 CV 9130, that case was dismissed with prejudice. However,
let me back you up a minute. Just slow down. Try to interrupt, but I need to get this clear. Both of those were dismissed for failure to prosecute, for failure to, on your part to take action.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Even though they were timely.
Correct.
Well, what happened?
What happened is that the Brecky decision came down saying an insurance company has a duty to investigate and adjust claims in good faith. We had the stay order that was issued in 9130, and the trial judge in that case dismissed all the, if you read the order, in that case, the 9130 order, it reads, the claims of Kahn, Bang, Min, and Vu, and Q are all dismissed. They dismissed them from 9130, as they shall be, are already being, or can be adjudged in case number 765. So he dismissed them from 9130, and he moved the UIM claims over to 765.
Okay.
Then, soon thereafter, the stay order came down, stipulated to by the parties that that action with the UIM claims in 765, that's the action dismissed without prejudice, that was stayed by court order until full resolution of that Hartford claim.
Okay, and Hartford did get resolved, and then that case was dismissed.
It was resolved on April 4/06. We had 1 year of appellate procedures that were available to us, and so the full resolution of that claim did not occur until April 4, 2007, and the trial court dismissed the case without prejudice 16 days later. And under Brecky, it's not our duty to prosecute the claims against State Farm. It's State Farm's duty to investigate and adjust the claim in good faith. That's the standard. And so we're waiting for them to investigate and adjust the claim in good faith. We're under a stay order, so we can't prosecute until April. Well, the first time we were able to prosecute that action was April 4, 2007.
And the judge, didn't the judge enter a show cause?
The judge heard the arguments and dismissed it anyway, 16 days after the stay order was arguably lifted. And it's our position that the stay order wasn't ever lifted because it was the trial court didn't do it. We entered into that stay order by stipulation of the parties, and it's my view, it remains until it's lifted. But given the best scenario for State Farm, that stay order, if it was automatically lifted upon full resolution of the claims against Hartford, that would not have occurred until April 4, 2007. And this action was dismissed with prejudice in 765. And then we appealed that, and this court said, you don't have a final appealable order, and you can bring these claims in the trial court. And so we just refiled it because it was dismissed without prejudice. And we did so timely under the statute. So we talked about the transfer of the stay order of the Court of Appeals decision, where this court said there are no UIM benefits until you resolve that case against Hartford. And the public policy that's articulated in Brecky, at page 188, public policy for Brecky is articulated in various pages of the decision, but it essentially states that it's quoting Heuser. Heuser has as its foundation a longstanding recognition of the policy favoring settlements of disputes by arbitration. We pointed to the established public policy favoring arbitration as an economic and efficient means of reducing costs and resolving disputes of this court. We also demanded arbitration timely We did so numerous times in these pleadings, and it's our position that under the State Farm policy language, if State Farms elect not to litigate this case, they're duty-bound to arbitrate it. They can't get out of paying the UM benefits that they know they owe on some technicality.
Is the duty to arbitrate also included within the statute of limitations?
Yes, and we complied with those statutes because we demanded arbitration timely in both scenarios. So if they file a motion to they file a motion to dismiss the litigation, they are duty-bound to arbitrate because they're electing, by doing so, they're electing not to litigate those claims. And therefore, they're duty-bound to arbitrate. And I'd like to point out that we have not seen State Farm agree to arbitration since 1995 on any case. They just don't do it. And so here we have strong public policies that this court's articulated in the Garceau decision in 1993, and in the Hoyser decision in 1998, advocating.
Mr. Muir, you wanted me to point out when you have about 5 minutes left and you're just under 5 minutes.
Okay, I'll finish this point and then I'll take a seat. But in the Hoyser decision, this court articulated its desire for arbitration as a strong public policy of this state, but the insurance companies don't arbitrate claims. They do not give you an arbitration option. Now, the State Farm policy originally said, look, if we can't agree as to the value of the claim, then there's two ways to proceed. You can proceed by arbitration, but we must agree to it, or litigation. State Farm never agrees to arbitration. They just don't. And when I questioned liability adjusters at depositions about this, they said, well, we just don't do it. When we talk to other State Farm employees, they say, we have a policy we don't arbitrate. And then after the Brekke decision, where the Supreme Court again articulated a strong public policy to arbitrate UM claims, State Farm changed its policy to take away arbitration altogether. So they mandate litigation, which is contrary to the public policy of this state. And so for the reasons we articulated in our brief, this court should abolish litigation of all UM disputes. Now, if you look carefully at the Brekke decision, what it says is, hey, we have an insurance policy. First, we have a quasi-fiduciary duty adopted by our Colorado Supreme Court, where our Colorado Supreme Court said the insurance company has a duty to investigate and adjust claims in good faith. There's also a corresponding duty on part of the insured to respond to any inquiries by State Farm. They can make them submit to examinations. They can make them provide records. They can make them provide authorizations. They can make them provide anything that they want, essentially. And they list all the duties. And what the Supreme Court said is, if both sides comply with their requirements, there really is no need to litigate. But what State Farm does is they put you through that process, and then they make you re-litigate all that. They make you do it all over again. And we have articulated policies that state that it's void against public policy to engage in conduct that requires their insurers to dilute the benefits that are available to them. And if you ever ask State Farm in an uninsured motorist case, well, let's go to arbitration. Let's go to mediation, for example, with JAG, or the dispute mediation groups. In a UM case, State Farm will always say, no, we're not going to agree to mediate. File your lawsuit. If you can't agree to the value of the claim, file your lawsuit. Now, most of these policies are 25,000, maybe 50,000 policies. And so State Farm knows if your insured is trying to get $25,000 of benefits and they can put you through requests for production of documents, interrogatories, depositions, and through years and years of litigation to get your $25,000, everybody walks away. And that's why they don't agree to go to mediation. That's why they never mediate. That's why they changed their policy after Brekke to require litigation. And it's all contrary to public policy. So this court and the Supreme Court has articulated its strong public policy since 1993 for favoring arbitration, but we have no enforcement mechanism. State Farm doesn't care, because as long as it's profitable for them to ignore the policies of this state, they're going to do it. And for 17 years, they've ignored our policies, and they continue to ignore them, and we hope that this court recognizes that problem and addresses it in this decision. And we've also recommended some other changes, such as awarding legal fees to the prevailing party. That's an incentive for them not to litigate, or writing in the opinion that there ought to be subrogation. If they look at a case and they say, hey, we owe the UIM benefits, like in this case, we have over $900,000 in medical bills. They owe the benefits, and they know it. So why can't they just pay what they owe, and if we recovered against the Hartford decision, they then can subrogate. They can subrogate and get their money back. But why make the insurers wait 14 years to get their benefits when the policy for UM coverage is is protection and peace of mind. So there ought to be subrogation, there ought to be fees that are awarded by this court finding that there's a fiduciary duty, and we ought to abolish litigation of UM claims. I have 45 seconds left, and I'll reserve that for rebuttal. Thank you.
May it please the court, Carl Chambers appearing on behalf of the appellee State Farm Mutual Automobile Insurance Company. I know the judges have all read the briefs and aware of the facts in this case. I'm not going to waste a lot of time going through the facts. This has been a long litigated case for many years, many appeals, many different civil lawsuits. Certainly if the court has any questions about the factual background, I'll attempt to answer those, but I would rather focus on the legal issues, which I think are more important to the court.
I have a factual question.
Certainly.
I think it's factual. If I can interrupt you, please. Is this case about $25,000 remaining for under State Farm's underinsured motorist coverage?
Conceivably.
You already paid $75,000.
Right. The policy is a 100-300 policy,
right.
So there would arguably be another $225,000 in coverage because of the number of individuals involved, because there are five passengers and mm-hmm. the personal representative and the personal representatives, the deceased parents were involved as well. So. Conceivably, there would be a potential of $225,000 in UIM coverage.
We're only talking about Mr. Pham here, aren't we?
No, this lawsuit involved, it's the same lawsuit that's been brought three other times already. The plaintiffs in the lawsuit are the personal representative of the estate, the decedent's parents, and then the five passengers in the motor vehicle
at the time. Passengers are still included.
Correct.
And they were included in?
They were included.
765 and 1930.
Correct.
Mr. Chambers, I have a follow-up factual question. Can you explain why State Farm did not provide any payments under the $300,000 part of the occurrence policy?
Because the claim was still being litigated. The UIM claims were never litigated. What happened was the case started. There was some preliminary discovery ongoing. They settled their claim against Mr. Guerrero, who was the at-fault party, for the Allstate policy limits of $50,000 that was distributed among them. And then they were pursuing their claim against the Hartford policy. They claimed that Mr. Guerrero was in the course and scope of his employment, and therefore they were proceeding with that claim to be litigated.
Well, I appreciate that explanation, but it doesn't answer my question, because State Farm did agree to pay the $75,000 to Mr. Pham.
Correct.
So what's the distinction between that and the payment under the occurrence part of the policy that would have applied to the passengers?
Because the passengers needed to demonstrate what their damages were. None of that ever took place. There's no discovery on that issue in terms of what their damages were. They had to establish what their damages are in order for there to be some type of underinsured motorist claim. It never got to that point.
But why did, okay, I may be dense here, but I don't understand what motivated State Farm to settle the claim on behalf of Mr. Pham.
Because he was a decedent, and it appeared to them that his damage would obviously be at the policy limits of the $100,000. What happened was it was determined that because of his death, was going to be that type of claim, and so they paid $75,000. Allstate paid their liability limits of $25,000 to the decedent or his estate, and then the other $25,000 went to the remaining passengers to distribute.
So I gather that State Farm's position is that if the 1996 and 1998 cases had not been dismissed for failure to prosecute, there would have been an opportunity for the passengers to litigate the availability of that other part of the State Farm policy.
Correct, and that's what the position was. That if they wanted to pursue those, they needed to pursue those in those two claims that were, those two lawsuits that were already pending. And That is not the issue before this court. And those cases have already been dismissed. Appeals have been filed in those cases. The dismissal of those cases have been upheld on appeal. What we're dealing with here is whether a lawsuit can be filed for UIM benefits 13 years after the subject motor vehicle accident.
So let me follow up on that part of I imagine you were going to get to the statute of limitations, but do you agree with Mr. Muir that both subsections A and B of the statute of limitations statute apply here?
I do not agree with him. This is not an uninsured motorist claim. This is an underinsured motorist claim. The statutory section provides if there's not any other type of coverage. Here there was other type of coverage, and that was paid. The Allstate liability policy made payments to the decedent's estate and to the passengers in May of 1998, I believe that it was, that those payments were made.
Well, Mr. Muir argued, as you heard, that we should consider a subsection A of the statute because it's an uninsured motorist claim with respect to Hartford. Is there any case law on that one way or the other?
I would certainly, there's no case law in favor of that proposition. I think the case law, and I unfortunately cannot cite to a particular case, but I mean that by definition, it doesn't meet the definition of an uninsured motor vehicle because there is other liability coverage involved. And so the only statute that you're looking at is underinsured motorists. And I'm not sure that the in my recollection serves me accurately, the claims in the underlying lawsuits in the 96 CV case and the 98 CV case, both were claims for underinsured motorist benefits. The claims were not made for uninsured motorist benefits. And the same with this underlying case and this 08 action, they were for underinsured motorist benefits, which I believe is the only applicable provision. And if you look at that, as the court does, and you look at the plain language of the statute, the statute clearly provides that this lawsuit filed in 2008 was not timely. The statute provides that you have 3 years to bring the suit after the accident happens. That occurred in this case. The accident was in 1995, filed the lawsuit in 1996, filed the additional lawsuit in 1998, but both those lawsuits claims were made for underinsured motorist benefits. The claim was timely in that respect. To come in now in 2008 is not timely. The only time you get some additional time beyond the 3 years is if you secure that time of filing the lawsuit within the 3 years, and then within that, after that's done, you file the bodily injury claim, which is done, and then as sometime thereafter, you get a settlement or a judgment of that underlying bodily injury claim, then you have 2 years after that date to proceed with your underinsured motorist claim. At the latest, that occurred in this case in May of 2008 when the payment was made under the Allstate policy. At that point in time, you had the payment of a settlement of the bodily injury, of the underlying bodily injury claim, and therefore the statute would have run at that point in time. To the extent that Mr. Muir is arguing the Hartford policy, at that point in time, there was also a confessed judgment that was entered against Mr. Guerrera for some $1.5 million, I believe. Again, if you look at the statutory language, that would constitute when the underlying bodily injury judgment was entered. So conceivably, at best, he would have had an additional 2 years of time to file the lawsuit after those May 1998 payments. He didn't file the lawsuit within that time because, in fact, there were already pending UIM claims. This lawsuit in 2008 is clearly untimely.
Mr. Chambers, what is your response to Mr. Muir's argument in his briefs that the one case was dismissed without prejudice? And in your brief, you say, well, the case was final, but there was no authority associated with that statement to say that would be determinative.
Well, again, if Mr. Muir wanted to appeal that decision, that 96 case, he was required to file an appeal in that case. The time for filing an appeal has lapsed in that particular case. And
well,
I would also...
As I understand it, he tried to do that and the appeal was dismissed because it was not a final judgment, because it was a dismissal without prejudice.
I don't think that has a bearing on the fact of whether he can now bring the claim in 2008. Whether the 96 case was dismissed with or without prejudice does not allow him to come back in and file a brand new lawsuit in 2008 and claim that he's still pursuing the original action.
Well, you may well be right about that. What I was asking originally, and I'll ask again, is there any authority that you can cite to us in support of that statement?
Not off the top of my head, Your Honor. I cannot.
Okay. Thank you.
But if going back, I think what you really all you have to do is to look at the statute, and the language of the statute is clear in terms of the timing of when a claim can be brought. This lawsuit in 2008 is not within that time period. Mr. Muir also makes some argument concerning the case against Hartford not being finalized until sometime in 2007, and therefore he had 2 years from that time period to file this lawsuit. That's not consistent with the statute. The pursuit of the claim against Hartford was not a bodily injury liability claim lawsuit. What he was doing was proceeding against the insurance policy, trying to collect on the insurance policy that was being provided by Hartford. The other issue that has been raised in the appeal concerns the bad faith allegations. Again, it's our position for a number of reasons that the court properly dismissed those. This was actually a pretty comprehensive decision by the trial court where he went through an analysis and described the reliance of his dismissal. And in this particular case, the bad faith claim was properly dismissed for a number of reasons. First, the bad faith claim would, as a preliminary matter, require that there be some type of breach of contract to support that. Here, there is no underlying breach of contract because the determination was already made that there is no UIM claim because it's barred by the statute of limitations. So if he can't proceed with a breach of contract claim for the UIM benefits, there can be no corresponding bad faith allegation. Mr. Muir then attempts to get around that by arguing that there was additional bad faith by State Farm after the underlying case against Hartford was finally dismissed. Again, that's presupposing that he could have pursued a claim. There was no indication that State Farm was bound by that confessed judgment that was entered or was required to do anything after that was entered. The fact of the matter was that there had been a dismissal of the underlying actions, and so therefore there could continue to be no breach of contract pursuit, and without that there could be no bad faith. The other issues that Mr. Muir's references really have nothing to do with what this appeal is here for. He argues various public policy matters that were not raised before the trial court. He argues that State Farm does not arbitrate claims. None of that's in evidence or in facts before this court. None of it has to do with the resolution of what this court needs to decide, which is whether or not the trial court properly determined that this case should be dismissed because the claim was not filed within the statute of limitations. The court properly decided that. The court also determined that these other issues that were raised were properly dismissed or not subject to the current lawsuit because of the issue of res judicata that was found to apply because he was asserting the exact same claims that had been asserted in two previous lawsuits. This matter has gone on for way too many years now. Mr. Muir's had ample opportunity to litigate this case in various different forms, various district court cases, two federal court cases, has filed numerous appeals that have all come to the same conclusion that the claims are no longer valid, they can no longer be pursued because they are time-barred and were not diligently prosecuted. And therefore, we request that this court affirm the judgment of dismissal.
Thank you. The claims are clearly not time barred. The underlying bodily injury claim against Hartford wasn't resolved by Judge Walker Miller until April 4/06, and we filed the action within 2 years of that date. Furthermore, the stay order added another year where we couldn't do anything on that action until April 4, 2007. And that it was a bodily injury claim that we brought against the at-fault driver with respect to Hartford, because we have to show Garrett's negligence caused damages, and the Hartford insurance policy that was issued on his motor vehicle provided the liability coverage. And so it was clearly a bodily injury claim. With respect to the judgment, this is a judgment that State Farm wanted us to enter into. The stipulated confessed judgment that we entered into benefited State Farm because it was the only way that we can pursue Hartford for the $1 million of liability.
I see you're out of time.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you, counsel, for your arguments. The case will stand submitted, and a written opinion will issue in due course. That concludes the oral arguments for this docket. The court will be in recess.
Subject to call.